All right, so let's get started. Welcome to Stories from Building the New Windows Mail App. I'm Jeremy Epling. I'm one of the program manager leads on the Mail App team. And I'm really excited to be here today to talk with all of you about some of the stories that we've experienced building the app all the way from the beginning of Windows 8, talk about what that was like, a couple of things we've learned as we've done 4 major updates since Windows 8 shipped, and then what we're really optimizing for in Windows 8.1. And throughout the talk, I'm not going to tell you just what happened in the Mail app, but also try to pull out a set of patterns that I think will be really interesting for you to look at in your own apps as well. So let's go ahead and get started. So there's really 3 areas we're going to talk about today. And also, one of the things I wanted to mention was this talk was billed at a 300 talk. It's more of a 200 talk with sections that drop into 300 every now and then. The first thing we're going to talk about is how to be powerful on all devices. So as you all have seen with the new devices that you got, small form factor devices are really important, but it's not just about small form factors, it's also very large form factors, and also multiple different types of input. So it's not just about touch and being great on a tablet, it's also we have convertibles, we have laptops, we have really large all-in-ones with 30-inch screens, we have mouse and keyboard as well. And how do we do a great job designing for all of those? And that's something that we've really focused on for 8.1 with the Mail app. Next, we're going to talk about leveraging Windows and existing code. So in this, I'm going to rewind back to the early developer experiences we had building a brand new app on Windows 8. Tell you about which code we leveraged from other projects, previous projects that we had worked on in the past, and then how did we make some of those key choices between, you know, will our backend, or what we call the backend or platform for our app, be C++, CX, will it be C#? And then also how we made the decision between HTML and XAML. And then in the last section, I'm going to talk a little bit about the performance optimizations we've done. Especially in the spring update, you've probably noticed some pretty big perf improvements, and you'll notice even more in the 8.1 release when you have that. So first, I'm going to start off by talking about being powerful on all devices. Just like I mentioned a moment ago, it's not just about tablets. So we felt like with the Mail app, when we first came out with Windows 8, it actually was a pretty good Mail app. And then with our spring update, we thought we really rounded out that feature set and then was able to add a lot of performance, especially on ARM class hardware. And then for 8.1, we felt like what we really needed to do was not just make sure we were great on touch systems, but also really focus on mouse and keyboard, and then also these large form factor devices, because there's just an expectation that people have, especially on large form factor devices, for it to be extremely efficient and extremely powerful. And we know that's an expectation people bring whenever they're using email, whenever they're using calendar and contacts, so we really wanted to optimize around that. So what I'm going to do now is walk you through the 8.1 Mail app. So this is the new 8.1 Mail app. You probably saw this in the keynote. It's unfortunately not in your release preview build, but it will be there for the final release of 8.1. So as you can see, we've made some pretty large changes to the Mail app. One of the main things we focused on is really how do we make it a more powerful and personal experience. And those are 2 words we've used throughout the whole design process. So if you notice here, one of the most noticeable changes is this teal bar on the left that we affectionately call the power pane. And what this does is it automatically categorizes your email for you. So you can see here, I've got my inbox right at the top. Right below here, I've got favorites. So these are my favorite people. We automatically look at the emails that have been sent to you, people that you send email to frequently, and then automatically pick a couple key favorites for you right here. So in this case, it's Ben and Jamie. And then below here, I have flagged items, so anything that I'm marking for follow-up. We take newsletters and social updates. So if you're on an Outlook.com account, one of the things we've learned is the best apps are really paired with really powerful services. So what we want to do is make sure the best of Exchange, one of our Microsoft email solutions, and Outlook.com really comes through in the app. So if you're connected to Outlook.com, we automatically will take the newsletters out of your inbox and social updates and filter them into these 2 specific views and just automatically categorize your email for you. And then, if you love folders, as I still use folders, you can still have a set of folders down here. But if you want to get to the full list, you can click here, see all the different folders, then you can go ahead and add a folder to the list, remove a folder from the list. You can do the same thing for people, then go through and be like, oh, I really want to keep up on all the mail I've gotten from Greg. And then I can go here and click on Jamie. and then I can see all the email from Jamie. So what this is really about is trying to create this powerful and personal experience. Powerful in the fact that it's really easy to sort and filter your email in these different ways, and personal because we know email is really about people. And a lot of the time, what we refer to as gray mail, some of the social updates and some of the newsletters that you get aren't the thing that you really care about the most, and they end up cluttering up your inbox. So it's really easy to miss email that comes from the most important people in your life. So we really try to elevate those people so I can see right when I have a new email from Jamie or anyone that you have on your list. A couple other things that we focused on around just being more powerful and efficient has really been around the type of commands we support. So one of the things that you'll notice here is we know that multi-select is a really popular thing to do in the mail app. So we've gone ahead and made that even easier by creating checkboxes down the left-hand side. So the second you click on one of these checkboxes, you enter select mode. And this is something that you can implement yourself as well on top of the list view control. And we use list view here. There's a toggle select mode that you can turn off. And then we did some work to add some checkboxes on this. So as I go through here and tap, items are automatically selected no matter where I type or tap. And then I can easily sort of go out of selection mode right there. You'll also notice that the second you go into selection mode, we automatically bring up the app bar. And we found this is a really important pattern for when you're in what we call triaging your email or getting through your email. Maybe you're someone that likes to use Mark as Read. Maybe you like to use Flag. Maybe you delete. Maybe you do a couple different of those tasks all in tandem. We realize that when you're multi-selecting, the intent behind that is probably to do some command on that. So we want to go ahead and bring up the app bar automatically. And then on the app bar, we've tried to sort the commands so people can really get an idea visually of where's that command they're looking for. If you just have a whole row of 10 commands all over on the left-hand side, all over on the right-hand side, you'll very quickly notice that it's kind of hard. You have to look at every single one of those commands, really inspect it to find that one you're looking for. So that's why we've gone ahead and created grouping here. The way we thought about grouping was on the left-hand side are sort of the global commands that apply to the whole app, selection mode, managing folders, emptying folders, creating folders. On the right-hand side, which is where the message is, are the commands that really act on that message. So you can junk an email, you can go ahead and move an email, you can mark it as read, delete it, different things related specifically to that message. You can even go in and print it as well. But we noticed to really be great with mouse, one of the things on a touch device, it's just a smaller screen, so it's easier to reach things. That's another reason why we've focused on putting things on the left and the right and on the top, so that you can actually use your thumbs. If you're holding the device, you can just go right here, and you don't have to have a whole posture change where you have to remove one hand, sort of balance the device, and go back. We wanted that to be really efficient. But we noticed, especially when you're on really large screens, that that just means a whole lot of mouse distance you have to travel. So it's not really the best way to optimize for mouse. We want to make sure we have a consistent experience, so we still have the app bar that you can use with the mouse, but we also added what we call hover commands. So you'll notice right here, as I'm hover-overing this mail message, I can easily just mark it as unread, mark it as read, I can delete it, or flag the message right here. So there are times when you should think about when you're building your app, where you want to have redundancy, and where that redundancy really makes your app more efficient. You don't want to have 10 arbitrary ways to do something, but if you have multiple that are really thought through, where I want to be great with mouse, I want to be great with keyboard or touch, a lot of times you should think about replicating those commands in different ways. Same with multi-select as well. Maybe if your app very, very heavily relies on multi-select, you should consider in a pattern like having checkboxes into your app. Another thing that we focused on for efficiency was using the new search box control. So if you click right here, search is just right on top of the message list. And this was a really big advantage for mail. So if I go through, I can search for all mail from Greg. You can see right there, Greg was mentioned here in Huffington Post as well. And the nice thing about this is, in the past, you had a search pane that came over. And especially for mail, it was difficult because it would occlude part of this screen over here. So then you couldn't really see what was going on because the search pane came over top of it. So now this allows us to really get an integrated search experience. And if integrated search or search is a key task in your app, it's something you should also think about. And it also allowed us to build a more rich UI around search. So search is a pretty important task in email. You don't just want to issue one search. So in this case, we get to also say, hey, I don't only want to search in my inbox, the current folder I'm in, but maybe I want to search all folders. And it gives you more flexibility to build a really powerful search experience in your app, which we found to be very valuable. One of the other things that you think about is the multi-window model. So as you've seen, as we look at all the different sizes of applications, One of the things you want to keep in mind is how does your app scale across those, and then how does it interact with other apps? So one of the things that we've done is you'll notice here I've got some photos from Wendy. If I go ahead and click on one of those photos, we automatically launch the Photos app. So that'll be something that you get by default if you end up just executing the Photos app. But one of the things you'll notice specifically that happened with the Mail app is in Windows 8, the Photos app just would have completely replaced the email. So you would have lost the context of where you were. In this case, we did extra work to integrate with the Photos protocol handler. So what we say is, hey, Mail app, we want to be the supplementary experience to Photos. So we actually say, please make us small, and then make the Photos app really big. So you can get this really immersive experience of Photos. Unlike our previous releases, you can now pan through all of those photos and attachments right there. And then I can still have the context of the email with Wendy at the same time. Then I can go ahead and reply, and that just happens directly in line in the Mail app. So I don't have to go anywhere else to reply to email. There's not this big full screen transition. It just happens right there and just makes this really seamless, powerful experience right there in email. And then also what you'll notice is sometimes you want to be writing multiple emails at the same time. So you may be working on one email and you want to reference another one. So what we've done is added support for multiple windows. So if you're using the Reader app in Release Preview, or if you're using Internet Explorer, they also have this support. Mail will have it in the final release as well. So if I go here, I can create another child window and basically break out that email. So then I can be monitoring my inbox. Maybe I want to reference this other email from Greg. I can click on that, and then I can copy and paste from one email directly to the other and really multitask. And you can create n number of these emails as you're going through the app. One of the things you'll also notice is this adaptive scaling that's happening here. So as I go here, I go back to Mail. When Mail's larger, you'll notice that we have full three-column design. So I can see all of my favorite people here. I can see all the major views of my email. I can view the message list and the reading pane. And as I scroll down a little bit more, we'll start to collapse our UI. So we still feel like it's really important to provide as much of a powerful experience as we can for the Mail app, even at smaller sizes. Because we know for email, a lot of people, it's really about being powerful and really productive. And it's also something that we want to even have on smaller 7-inch devices and in portrait mode. So we try to keep as much of that content as we're scaling down as possible. And this is something that if you're using the built-in controls like Hub Control or List View Control, they've made it much easier to do adaptive scaling and then automatically changing orientation. So if you have an app that pans horizontally a grid view, they now support also switching that so that it can be a vertical grid view and scrolling there. So some of that's built into the platform. And then we also use media queries to do dynamic sizing of our panes in the app overall. So then you'll notice here, some things went away, but I can still access that full functionality. As the app gets even smaller, it becomes kind of ridiculous if you imagine like squeezing everything in there and then you can't really read the text and it's like you get two words. So at that point we decided, hey, we're not really providing the best experience by squeezing everything to the maximum. So then we switch into another mode. And in this mode, I can see the reading pane, so I get a great reading experience for what this is, and I get plenty of room. For us, that's really important, especially because newsletters are often really wide, and we don't want people to have to scroll those, like mail you may get from Crate and Barrel. And then when you go back to the Mail app, you can still get to the full power pane here on the left in the message list. And then we also support all the way down to 320. So this is something to consider for your app as well. By default, the minimum size in 8.1 is 500 pixels wide. But for the Mail app, we decided to opt in to 320 pixels, which was the snap size on Windows 8. And we did that because we think there's a really powerful notification experience that people want to have. So there are notifications that can just come up as you get new email, and you can choose to get those from your favorites. But in this experience, what we've decided is, wow, there's some times when you just really want to monitor every single thing that's come into your inbox, and notifications aren't the best way because maybe you even missed something. And we felt like that was a great reason for us still to support this 320 size. So that's a little bit about what we're looking at for Mail in 8.1. And a lot of this focus, again, was around being powerful on all device sizes. But one of the part of that is not just the displays, it's also the input. So for touch, I talked about easy thumb access and reducing posture changes is something to think about in your design. For mouse, think about hover. You don't want to have commands that are only available on hover. If you end up doing that, then they're not accessible via touch, but they're a great thing to do for supplementary commands, so you can reduce mouse travel. And then keyboard's also an important thing that we focused on. So in the Mail app, we now have keyboard shortcuts for just about everything. We actually show those on all the tooltips. And then also thinking about tabbing around your app and just making it really easy to move between those different sections of your app. And then optimizing for all sizes. So all the way from 70 inches to 30 inches, thinking about landscape, thinking about portrait. And then, as I mentioned before, you can use Hub Control, List View, CSS media queries are great ways, great tools to make this even simpler. And then design scenarios on when you launch other apps. So by default, we go 50-50. If we, I think that happens by default for all of your apps, but then you can opt into things like we did for photos, where we wanted to be smaller, we want the photos to be big, so you get this rich, visceral experience of looking at the photos. When we launch Internet Explorer, we actually go 50-50, because we feel like, hey, we're sort of a companion to whatever you're viewing on the web. You can also choose to have the app that you're launching go really small. So if the Mail app ever launches Skype, we feel like for an IM session, you kind of want a small thing here, or if you're doing voice or video call. So we actually leave the Mail app big, and then you end up launching Skype smaller off to the side. So that's a little bit about what we've been focusing on in 8.1. And really, the heart of 8.1 really is working across all those different device sizes. So that's where we put a lot of time and our design effort into. Now I want to rewind a little bit back to when we first started off on the Mail project, talk about some of those core questions that we had to answer. So one of the most often questions I get is HTML or XAML. Is one better than the other? Which one's faster? Which one has more controls? Which one's the best one? And really, there is no one-size-fits-all answer. And I know that's disappointing for many people, but it really just depends on a number of factors. And Chris Anderson had a talk on this yesterday. I have a full list of resources at the end of this to talk about adaptive scaling more, the controls we use, some of the other talks that support this. But I'll go over, at least on our team, the core questions we asked ourselves. One of it was, do you have an existing investment in either of these? So for the Mail apps we built in the past, they've all been common control. They were all Win32 code or custom frameworks we've built on Win32. And none of those really worked in modern. So we didn't have any existing investment. That could be different for you. You may have a Windows Phone app where you've already invested in XAML. You may have a website where you've already invested a lot in HTML. And if you have, those are really powerful reasons to stick with one of those technologies. You have to look at the expertise of your team. So for us, most of our UI developers were actually not used to doing HTML or XAML. So again, that one didn't apply to us, but it could for your team. The last one was really the most important question to us, is are specific set of scenarios better enabled by one platform? So this is really what pushed us toward HTML for our app. Those big reasons are almost all email is HTML email. Yeah, there's rich text. Yeah, there's plain text. But pretty much everything you get is HTML email. And we wanted to make sure we could accurately render those emails every single time. And we didn't want to have to be doing a lot of interop in the case between like XAML or if we had DX as the core app in HTML. We knew that that interop can be kind of slow and add a little bit of a cost. The other thing is not just about accurate rendering, but also really accurate editing. We know most people want a WYSIWYG or what you see is what you get experience. So as you're typing in Mail, you're bolding, you're using italics, you're using underline. You want, when the person receives that email, for it to look exactly the same as when you were typing that email. So one of the things we focus on was like, hey, if we can be all within HTML in our editing experience, then we can pretty much guarantee that experience. And then there were just a couple added benefits that didn't really fall into any of these. One of it is that with Windows 8.1 and with Windows 8, you get to leverage the latest and greatest HTML standards. So you don't have to think about support for older browsers or older standards or quirks or things like that. You can really push all the way to the limit on HTML5. Which we found to be super valuable. And there's just a huge community of frameworks, from looking at jQuery to a set of tools like JS Hint or Less. There's so much variety in the tools and frameworks out there for JavaScript. We just found that really appealing. So this is all what led us to choosing HTML for our app. But in the Windows and in the Windows Store, there are tons of XAML and HTML apps. So one's not fundamentally better than the other. This just really fed our scenarios really well. So one of the next questions we had to say is, like, what are the controls that we should pick and what should we look at there? So here's the Mail app that I just showed you. As you noticed, the PowerPane, what we call the navigation UI on the left, it just has a lot of dynamic aspects to it. One of the things is it's not really a normal list representation. It has lots of sections that expand, collapse. It has multiple hit targets, things coming and going. It's a shorter list of items, so we felt like we didn't need the full power of list view there because it's a small list, and also it never really needs to be virtualized. We didn't need multi-select. So those are some of the core benefits of list view that didn't really apply in this scenario. And then also, as we were designing it, it was an area where we felt like it was kind of the heart and soul of our app, and we wanted to be able to do just about anything there. So in case we ever wanted to tweak the UI or do something, the nice thing about list view is it's great at building lists, but if you want to push it into non-list scenarios, it's built as a list control. So it's not necessarily give you all the flexibility for doing things that aren't list-like. So that really allowed us the power to create something custom and something really unique. But in almost every case, we've actually ended up using the system controls. So for the search box, we use the default search box control that's new in 8.1. One of the great things about this control is not only it's really easy to migrate to, so before we had integrated with the search contract, a lot of that code just came over automatically for us looking at suggestions and autocomplete. It also does a great job integrating with IMEs. So if you're ever typing in Korean, Japanese, Chinese, if you have users in those markets, one of the things that they do is put the IME candidate window directly above the auto suggestions. And then John Gordner had a talk yesterday that I'll link to at the end of mine that you can go and check out and watch online that has more details about that. For our core list, like a lot of email really is about a massive list of items. So for this, list view was just an obvious choice for us. And you'll notice that we've even extended it in some ways to make it even a little bit more rich. So we have what we call conversation threading there. So if you tap on an item, we'll expand and show you everything in that thread. And we just use that using the standard list view APIs of inserting and removing items dynamically. And this has been a really powerful control for us. It scales from tens of emails to thousands of emails, as some people have. It supports all sorts of different selection modes, like control, click, select, cross swipe, moving keyboard focus, a lot of those things you really don't want to think about. And building a list view from scratch is really difficult, especially one that's performant. So using the built-in control, especially when you have something that really, really behaves like a list, we found to be a huge benefit to us. For the attachment well, we ended up not using list view for that because, again, we didn't need a lot of the power that comes from list view because most emails don't have attachments. Looking at data from Outlook.com and some of the other services we have in Microsoft, we realize even if you do get attachments, it's only one, two, maybe three, and then it really starts to drop off after that. So the controls that felt the best for us was a new control in Windows 8.1 called Repeater and then using Item Container. And that enabled us to do this nice puzzle layout that you'll notice, where the photos keep their orientation, but are still stacked close to each other. So I have a portrait orientation photo there first, then a couple of landscape photos, and then they automatically wrap around to the second line. Obviously, something that's really important with email is making sure the content you get is safe and secure. So for the core message body, we actually use an iframe. For Windows 8.1, there actually is a new control called WebView. WebView is really great if you need to host an actual full web page and need that functionality back, forth, really having that thing behave like a full web page so you don't get some of these frame experiences that some websites have. For us, we didn't really need to host remote HTML content. We had already downloaded the HTML as part of the email and have it here. And we also had some really specific needs related to email, like fixing up embedded attachments, things like that. Just as email has been around for 20 or so years, their keeping compatibility requires keeping up with a whole lot of quirks that different things could have. And some of that functionality just really made it easier for us to leverage with iframe. But if you are hosting full-on web content, you really should consider WebView. And then also, as I showed, you can reply inline directly from the reading pane. So we use that same iframe wrapper that we created there when you're replying to email as well. App bar I talked about before, we use the standard app bar. It allows us to group things on the left and the right. One of the nice things about the app bar is also the dynamic scaling, which I can show you right here. So if you look, when the app bar gets smaller, it actually drops the labels for us automatically. So if I'm at larger sizes, you can see I add more buttons automatically here on the left and right. As I go down, we end up dropping some buttons. And then if I end up going full screen, actually the labels come back. And a lot of that's handled for free by the app bar control. So it really allows us to provide a consistent and powerful experience. And you can also do really rich things with app bar as well. It doesn't have to just be buttons that toggle things like flag. It can also launch flyouts and menus, things like that. Flyout control is also something that we end up using. And then the settings flyout, along with all the sort of built-in controls, like the toggle control and things like that, and select controls are all just built right into there for us. So the nice thing about leveraging these system controls is not only do you get a consistent experience across your app and other apps and with Windows as a whole, but it really allows you to focus on the areas where you want your app to be great and unique. So for us, one of those things was the power pane, and it really allows us to spend more time building that core, custom, unique experience of our app, and then get a lot of things for, quote, for free along the way. So for us, we ended up building a new HTML. One of the big things to think about when you're building your app is, how can you leverage these Windows controls? Where do you want your app to be unique? And maybe that's a place for you to think about building a custom control and spending more of your time and using custom controls in other places. The other thing is leveraging web tools. Like internally, we use Less, we use JS Hint. I know a lot of apps are built using jQuery. There's a really large set of powerful frameworks out there, and those, for the most part, just work just by dropping them in directly into your HTML app. One of the next questions for us was building the right platform as well. So the next question I usually get, aside from HTML versus XAML, is C#, CX, C++. Do you have an investment in either? This is, again, the same set of questions to ask yourself. Where is your code? Maybe if you have an Android app or an iOS app that you're porting over, you already have an investment in C++, especially a portable C++ as opposed to Objective-C. Or if you have a Windows Phone app, maybe it's already in C#. For us, we had an investment in our old desktop app, the Windows Live Mail app, in Outlook desktop, and in Windows Phone, which the back end there is actually written in C++. And we actually ported over a lot of that code and actually reuse it between. It's not completely free to reuse code between these because the platforms are a little bit different, but it's definitely possible. And it really gave us a leg up on our development. Also, look at the expertise of your team. For us, this is really about C++ and COM. A lot of our, quote, like platform developers are really familiar with this. So sticking with core C++ really was a great thing for us. And then only using CX really when we needed to project APIs out to our UI layer. And the last thing is, are your scenarios better enabled by one platform or the other? And again, Chris Anderson's talk goes into a lot more detail on this. But one of the things that was really important to us was background sync performance. We know we want our app to be able to sync email in the background. And the system, if you're taking too much time on the network or on the CPU, will just automatically kill your background tasks to preserve battery. So you want to make sure those are really, really efficient. So again, this all pushed us just to writing core C++ for a lot of our platform logic. And then the Mail App architecture. So here's a quick overview of sort of what the Mail App looks like. As you can see, MVVM at the top, we actually expose some WinRT objects up into our WWA process, wwwhost.exe, if you're familiar with that, with HTML apps. And then we have a separate process that runs in the background for background sync. This is really powerful for us because when we're running these sync operations in the background, that we don't have to spin up all of the UI as well. We can really get just the part that we need to do syncing. For database, we actually use Jet for our database. So this is on MSDN. You can check it out. There's other database options out there, like IndexedDB. We had an existing investment in Jet in the past, so that's the reason that we've built upon that. There's also great open source databases like SQLite out there. For search, we end up laying .eml files on the disk and just letting the indexer pick those up. And then we have a sync host that basically deals with our different sync providers, such as Exchange Active Sync, IMAP, WNS, which we use to talk directly to Outlook.com. So again, as a little wrap-up, look at using Windows controls, leveraging existing code as WinRT components, especially if you have an existing C++ or C# investment. And the great thing about this is you can have rapid releases of your apps. So for us, we released for the first time. We were basically done with the Mail app for Windows 8 in July of last year. And since then, we've had 4 major releases and 3 minor releases, the fourth one being in Windows 8.1 all in 1 year. And the store has been really valuable for us, especially when you're on 8.1. The thing that we love the most about 8.1 is that whenever an update gets pushed out from your app, it's automatically not only downloaded like it was in Windows 8, it's also installed. So your users will have an experience very much like the web, just like when you go to MSN.com and whenever they're pushing out something new, or Bing, you get it immediately. Now, one day users, you'll deploy within a day, up to 30 days, that will automatically be on everyone's machine. and then they'll just get the new best version of your app. So you can really quickly get respond to feedback that you get and also launch new features. So for the last section, one of the things we really spent time on was nailing performance. And for this part, you'll notice a pretty big difference between what we shipped at general availability of Windows in October, and then also what we have in the March update that just came out. And there's sort of three areas. Some of these are probably obvious to you if you've done perf before, but I feel like it was worth repeating anyway. One of them is defining your scenarios up front. So again, you can't define perf scenarios for every last scenario in your product, but pick what are those most core scenarios to your product. I'll walk you through what those were for the mail app and some of the specific changes we made. And then make sure you figure out how you want to optimize those all the way from the beginning. So right when you're writing your specs, whenever you're doing your dev architecture diagrams, really think about performance of those scenarios all the way from the beginning and test it out. Analyze often and on ARM devices. I really can't emphasize this as much enough. ARM really was, especially for us looking at Surface RT, the min bar. The second we made something super fast on Surface RT, it just got super fast everywhere else. I know it's really tempting. You may have some awesome dev machine that you're working on with like 8 cores, and you're like, oh, this thing's blazing fast right here. But then you put it on an ARM device, you'll notice a very different performance dynamic. And some of the workloads actually change depending on when you're on ARM. The nice benefit that we found is we never had to do code that was like, if ARM, do this. It was just, if you just make it faster on ARM, it just gets faster everywhere. So a great thing to look at is remote debugging. And definitely have an ARM device that you're doing as you're going through development. Don't wait all the way in to test it there, because then you may be too far in to make the changes that you need to make. And then there are some great new tools in Visual Studio for doing performance analysis. There's more talks on these that happen throughout the week, and I'll have a link to the end. We also use a tool called the Windows Performance Analyzer, which helps you get even lower level access to specifically things that IE or the web platform is doing. So here was our performance that we ended up with at GA. And then after some of the techniques that I'm going to show you in a minute, we were able to see pretty dramatic savings. So the HTML platform, you can definitely optimize it. You can definitely get a very, very fast app. And this is just talking about our spring update, and we expect to have even faster performance in our 8.1 update, which we're already working on right now. But as you can see, all the way between 36% to 63% savings in all the core scenarios people think about for our app, which we really focused on. Startup, expand is when you're clicking on a conversation and seeing more items and collapsing that back and forth. New emails, when you click on that plus button, see the initial compose pane come up, and then deleting emails. So right when you click on that email, you delete it, you want it to be gone instantaneously. So we spent a whole bunch of time really trying to understand, how do we make this faster? How do we do a great job optimizing HTML5 across JavaScript, HTML, CSS, and then also our interactions with WinRT? So one of the areas that was really powerful was thinking about scheduling work. So there's a great new feature in Windows 8.1 that we use extensively in the mail app called the WinJS Scheduler. It really helps you provide a very responsive experience. So it's not necessarily about just making everything run faster, but making sure the things that you want to happen first actually happen first. So maybe when you launch your app, you want your list view to come up first, and then maybe you have some other like images you may be grabbing for the web or something else happening that's a lower priority thing. And this allows you to really prioritize that work, not within just your app, but also all the way through the system. I'll show more on that in a second. And it also allows you to pre-build some UI you need later. So here's a good example of how we use it in the Windows Mail app. So by default, the most important thing for us to get up is the core frame and the power pane on the left. After that, we then bring in another set of data. So this isn't saying that we bring in message items later, but one of the things we found is hooking up accessibility events just takes time, and we didn't want to block the whole user experience on that. So we then say, hey, at the next level, once you're done building the core UI, add all the accessibility properties to our item template in the list view, and then start pulling in the images for things like the attachment well. After that, the next thing we end up looking at is pulling in profile pictures, getting pictures off disk or off the network can take a while, so we don't want to block our app showing just on those things, so those come in dynamically later. And then another thing is, in this case, Wendy sent an email to me, Jeffrey in this case, and there's only one person on that two line. But a lot of times when you can get email, There can be 50, 100 more people on that two line. And then we end up using the scheduler to sort of go through and take those in batches. So we'll be like, give us five names. Okay, go. And then we'll schedule another work item. Give us five, give us five, give us five. And then you can finally think about your off-screen items. So we run this at what's known as idle in the scheduler. So one of the things we want to be super fast is when you click that new button or you click reply or forward to an email, we just want it to snap right in. And then we want to be able to show you what we call the composition experience of writing that email. So what we do is after you start our app, we know it's pretty likely that eventually you're going to write an email. So in the background, in that idle time, we start building that composition experience. At the same time, you can see the red right under the message list, the list view that we have in the app. That's the same priority that list view itself is then pulling in its off-screen items, anticipating you wanting to scroll down, which is likely. And then we also end up building the app bar. So then whenever we need to show these pieces of UI, they come up just instantaneously, but they're happening on idle. So if the user is doing something else, they'll get put off for a while. So it still keeps the core of our app really responsive. So here's an example. The second the user ends up clicking new, we basically just show that. It doesn't actually slide in, but we just show it. And then for the app bar, it comes right in. So again, we don't have to build all this UI right when the user right-clicks to bring up the app bar, or right when they swipe, or right when they click new. We just pre-build it idly, knowing that the user will eventually get to it, because it's a very likely scenario. So what does this look like? One of the benefits across this with the scheduler is that you can actually schedule across all three sections. So it's not just about app code. You can also saying like, oh, I want this to happen in my app first. One of the things we notice in 8.1 is we'd call setImmediate to have something happen. And then there would be setImmediates going on in our app code. WinJS would be trying to prioritize what it thought was important. Then the system or the web platform would be trying to prioritize what it thought was important. And you end up with sort of this inconsistent experience where everyone's sort of fighting, but you can't coordinate work across the whole system, even if you could coordinate it in your app. Maybe you do some extra work like we did, really go in, spend tons of time in the performance tools and try to understand, okay, if we just align this right when this event happens in WinJS, maybe we can have this happen a little bit before this and try to micromanage it. But again, it's really a lot of detailed work and it's hard to design the experience that you want. So with the scheduler, instead of calling setImmediate, you end up calling the schedule function and then you give it a specific priority. So then all these different tasks are happening and then they actually get aligned. So I can say, hey, this thing in my app code, I want it to happen absolutely first. And then it'll happen first all the way up and down the stack. Then I can say, hey, this is normal priority. Oh, WinJS, you can look online and look at the MSDN documentation on what ListView considers sort of their normal priority tasks. And you can be like, eh, that seems about the same as my app code. So I want to sort of put that in normal. Or I want to put this in idle and say, eh, this can happen later. So what does this look like in your code? Today, you're probably using setImmediate. In the future, what you want to call is create scheduler, and then you want to schedule your work, your specific function, foo in this case. Most of the time, you'll end up using normal priority, but then there are times when you want something to happen really quickly. You can set it high priority, and then you can also set things at idle. And there was another talk on WinJS performance yesterday that you can catch online. I'll have it in the resources section of my slide that shows you there are even more levels that you can look through these. It's not just normal, high, and idle. So that's, again, about how do you schedule work on the UI thread of your app. But sometimes you have other things that you want to happen that you don't want to do on the UI thread, even if it is potentially UI work. So that's where web workers came in for us. And again, this isn't a pattern that works for every single app, but it depends on what your app is. In this case, using web workers didn't really help out the mail app in performance very much because a lot of our UI is created at runtime and dynamically based on what you're doing. Even when we're first setting up the app. So like creating the list view, getting the items, binding all of that, showing things. For the calendar app though, I'll show you a pattern here where it took 1.5 seconds off startup time using this pattern because they have a very large custom control and this pattern worked very well for that. So one thing to keep in mind with web workers, they can't access the DOM. So that makes it difficult. You would think, oh, I just want to put something off on a web worker. I want to do some computation. I want to do some data access and access the DOM. You can't do that. So one thing to keep in mind with this pattern is it does expose you as a developer to a lot more risk, but there's also some reward here depending on how your app's built. What you end up doing is basically pushing things off to a worker, creating all your UI as a string on that worker, passing that string back over, and then inserting it in inner HTML. So here's an example. I'm just going to show you calendar real quick, just so you get an idea of how it's different than the mail app. So for calendar, there really is just a core frame this outside, so you can see a big title up here, these back forward buttons here. And then the whole month view is really just a custom control that we created. If you look at week view, this is all a custom control, but you'll see there's this similar frame at the top, but the vast majority of it is one custom control. And this is where this pattern really comes to life. So let's say you have your default JS. This is a very simplified version of what we do, but just to make the point, you create your worker, in this case worker, worker.js. I then create my content element. So this is your div that's basically going to hold all of your big custom control that you have. And then you set up an event handler for your worker. And you say, hey, in this case, it's very simple. Whenever I get back an on message, I'm always going to assume the data that's passed back is that UI. I insert it right into innerHTML and go. One of the things that we found is if you spend a lot of time manipulating the DOM APIs, if you're like append child, while that's nice because it provides a lot of consistency in the DOM and it doesn't allow you to make mistakes, if you're doing a lot of that, it can affect performance. So if you do need to do that for some reason, it's a lot better to do all those writes as a big chunk and then read that data back out later to reduce the amount of formatting and layout passes happening. And this is another technique where you just insert it all at once. So the browser isn't confused about, oh, you added a couple things, let me do some work to clean those up, and then let me do some more work here. You just put it in all at once, and it does a big chunk of work. So this is my default JS. Then in the worker, what do? So you'll notice right up here, I get my appointments, so this could be like my data source function, I don't have it here, where I go get a bunch of appointments. And then I say get UI a string, and I pass in that data. I go through here, and what we've already done, again, this is very simplified, was we just created actual HTML strings. So here's sort of the start of what an appointment looks like. Here's the end of that appointment. Then we go through and just loop over all the appointments. We take that UI string, and then we just append the next start. We put the data in the middle. And then we append the end HTML, and we just keep looping through that for all the appointments. Then we send back that UI string, and then it posts a message back to the UI thread. So again, this definitely exposes you to risk, because if you make a typo here in your large string of HTML, if you have a lot of nested HTML, but we found that there are times when this is really powerful. If you have a really large custom control, it really reduces the amount of work that the web platform has to do. Another area that we focused on is really simplifying code. So what do I mean by that? A couple things. One of them is just having fewer elements and fewer rules. It really is that simple, especially if you have, if you're using item templates in a list view. So we ended up looking through our list view item template and found out that we had some divs that were grids. And then inside them, there were some more grids and some more grids and some more grids. And grid, while it's super powerful, you pay for that power. And we realized, hey, if we went through and simplified that and tried to only use one container grid and then use float layouts and just normal block layout within that, we noticed that we got much faster performance. We ended up reducing the number of elements in each one of those messages. I'll show you one in a second just so you can visualize this. Each one of these messages, you used to have a container grid. And then within here, on the first row, we'd have another grid where it took the subject, put it on the left, a grid for these that would end up coming up. And then we'd have another grid down here that could align something that we need at the front, some sort of decorator or this bar. And then we'd have, you know, have it, the text aligned here, then have a date. And again, all these nested grids. What we ended up doing was eventually just creating one grid for all of this, floating these items to the right whenever we needed to, and then just saying, hey, this is one row, this is a second row, and just creating a simple grid through that. What we ended up seeing between moving to simpler layouts and just reducing the number of elements we had was scrolling got twice as fast. And we removed half our elements, scrolling got twice as fast. And we've noticed that nice correlation between these all the time. And as I mentioned before, batching those DOM operations and manipulations was also a really powerful way. You want to basically write into the DOM everything, and then you want to read from it. If you end up writing a little bit, then reading, that'll cause multiple formatting passes to happen in the browser. And often formatting is the most expensive thing. It's actually not rendering and painting the UI. Another thing is using targeted CSS rules. So the key to this is really understand how does CSS evaluate rules. So what it does is it actually uses the very last rule on the far right side here, and then it works backwards up the chain. That last rule is often referred to as the terminal selector, if you're reading in the W3C docs. And what you really want is for that to be as specific as possible. For us, we just make a hard and fast rule is it has to be a class, it has to be an ID, one or the other, no exceptions. And we've noticed a whole lot of performance gain from doing this. So an example here, on the one on the left, bad code, I'm basically going through and I have something very specific in the beginning that then goes to something generic. That doesn't work very well because CSS evaluation happens at the end. So the div will be evaluated first, then the ID on foo. What you want is for both of them to be very specific, or at least the terminal selector at the end. So the good case here is bar is just a class. You want that to, that'll be evaluated very quickly, and then it'll roll up and evaluate everything else. Another example is on the right. Again, there are some really powerful properties like aria selected true. Just remember, with that power and that ease of writing that code comes a cost. And the cost is performance. So even in this case, if you use something like when selected, a class building on top of another class, much faster than using a property that's computed at runtime. And then if you end up using the Windows Performance Analyzer and you're looking actually at what's happening in IE, there's a function that we affectionately refer to as blopper. Blopper, if you see a lot of blopper in your stack, what that means is you're spending a ton of time formatting CSS. This is the magic function within IE that handles CSS rule evaluation. So if you're looking at your performance code, you can't see this function in Visual Studio, but if you're using Windows Performance Analyzer, you'll see this function in there. If you're spending a ton of time here, you should really look at your CSS rules and decide, are they being specific enough or are they too generic? So for nailing performance, there's really three areas we ended up focusing on. One of them was regularly analyzing performance on ARM. And again, I can't emphasize this enough. Really, throughout the whole development cycle, be running on ARM, use remote debugging, see how the performance is there. If you make it fast there, it's going to be fast everywhere. Scheduling supplemental work. The scheduler makes this super easy. And then simplifying your HTML and CSS. So again, sort of the three areas of focus for us have been leveraging Windows and existing code from other things, focusing on performance, and really creating experiences powerful on devices. A lot of this is around really not just thinking about touch experiences, but also mouse and keyboard and large form factors. So here are some of the talks that I referenced throughout. There's a lot of great talks on performance. Since we're at the end of the conference, you'll have to watch these online. But I definitely encourage you to look at these if you want to get more in-depth on how you accomplished some of the patterns that I talked about, both code patterns and then also design patterns. And now, open the mic for any questions. If you have a question, if you can come up to the mic, and then just so everyone can hear what you have to say. And thank you.
Are we going to need to wait for the release of 8.1 to get this? Because we got our nice 8.1 preview upgrade, but we don't have your very nice new mail product yet.
Yes, unfortunately, you'll have to wait for the final release of 8.1, but I guarantee you this will be there. And not only the mail app, but also an update for the calendar and people apps.
Yeah. Hey, during the keynote, Judy referred to the app as Outlook, and I noticed there's Outlook up the top. Is that just the account, or is it something that you're considering naming this app?
That's just the name of the account. Okay. So in the top left, we basically look at the domain name that you created with. So if you use Gmail, it would say Gmail up in that top left. If you use Outlook.com, it shows Outlook.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. First, let me say, great presentation. Thank you very much this
Thank
morning.
Thank you.
I got two questions. I'll actually switch them because the first one goes along with his. You mentioned that you have the Outlook or whichever account you have. Mm-hmm. What about something like LinkedIn inboxes? Are you working on something like that that you can talk about? Or what happens when I have multiple accounts on the same UI?
Yeah, I can show that. So here's an example here of the mail app. If you have multiple accounts, they actually come up here in the bottom left, just like we've done in the past. Mm-hmm. For this demo machine, I just set it up with one account. We've definitely considered looking at linked inboxes or merged accounts. One of the things that's been difficult going that direction is if you really want to have a service-specific experience, it becomes kind of odd if you put all of that email together and then you click on one email and you get a different set of commands and functionality than if you click on another email. And we found that for us to deliver the best experience, we can't just be purely a mail client app. We also need to be really special with the services we interact with. So for us, that's Exchange, and we spend a lot of time with IRM, email, advanced meeting scheduling, a lot of Exchange-specific features. And then we also want to work with great with Outlook.com. So in this case, you can see examples of this. Like when I do move all from, I can click here and also create a rule that creates a rule online. If I do sweep, one of the most used features on Outlook.com or one of the new unique features of Outlook.com, you can say I want to delete all email, keep the last 10 days, keep only the latest. That's usually great for like daily deals, set up a rule to do that. So right now, we're really just focusing on creating those great service-specific experiences.
Okay, thank you. And my second one, basically now as a company, you have for Windows RT, you got three different stories for the end user, for the customer. What is like the guidance that you like to show? Because you have Outlook, and you have the mail app, and basically you can go to the web and use Outlook.com also.
Yeah. So our story for Outlook.com is really, if you want a great Outlook.com experience on Windows 8, the mail app is that best experience. And just like you're seeing right now, us integrating features like move all from, rules, sweep, we have automatic replies that work across Outlook.com and Exchange, a lot of Exchange-specific functionality. We feel like that best experience really will be in the mail app, and you'll see us continue to invest in these areas of bringing more of that service-specific value directly into our client. For Outlook RT versus the mail app, Outlook RT is really great for a specific set of customers that need a lot of very advanced, specific email functionality that we just don't have available right now in the mail app. And we feel like that there are a lot of corporations specifically around email retention that have very specific rules, very specific user guidance on how to use email, and that's sort of locked down in some ways, or people, the users are definitely pushed toward using email a specific way based on the rules of their IT department. And we feel like Outlook helps us like satisfy that gap right now because it has that full set of functionality that are really some specific enterprises just need in order to get email done right now.
Thank you.
Sure.
What kind of changes are there going to be on the phone?
Oh, sorry. There are no announcements on Windows Phone right now. I can tell you we work very closely with the Windows Phone team.
Will new mail apps support media queries in actual emails? Like, what do you guys do about it?
Yes. Let's follow up offline on that one because I don't know the exact answer to that. I want to say yes, but I should double check. Yeah. You had a question? Yeah.
I was going to follow up on his question. Mm-hmm. So when you said, you know, there's all the enterprise stuff on the tools like Outlook app, should we see it then as, you know, this is for my work mail versus this is for my, you know, personal mail?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good boundary?
Yeah. So the question was for looking at Outlook RT and looking at the Windows Mail app, do we consider Outlook RT as being a work solution and the Mail app being just specifically like a personal email solution? And I would say, no, that's really not the way we're thinking about it. We want the Windows Mail app, the phrase we use a lot internally, is making sure it's great for your whole life. And we think one of the unique values of the Mail app is that you can pull all of your email into one place. And you can get still the specific value of each of those services. So like I said before, we do a ton of work to try to make Exchange even better. And you'll notice even more of that coming online in 8.1 and going forward. We look at Outlook really as people have very specific habits that a specific way that they want to use that they're very familiar with Outlook Desktop. And that's great there. And there's also some enterprises that just have very specific needs that just aren't available yet in the Windows Mail app. Oh, the question was, will Link be integrated in? So there's a feature. I actually forgot to show this one. If I click on Greg right here, there's a new Windows control called the contact card. We use this extensively in the Mail app. Whenever you see someone's name, you can click on them and perform a set of actions on that person. And this is something that you can use in your Mail app. There's also data level access as well, so that not only if you are connecting to, you know, Outlook.com, also for Exchange. This also merges in your contacts from Facebook if you've set those in on your LiveID or on your Microsoft account. So Link also has the opportunity to supply verbs specific to this. So today, you can imagine if I had Skype installed, which I don't right now, call would become a dropdown, and it would let me choose between multiple call apps. It would let me choose between multiple IM apps, things like that. Sure. Yes, go on ahead.
Any chance you guys would give us access to the mail sync part of it, like the IMAP client and stuff?
Yeah, it's something that's been talked about, but right now we have no plans to release any of the core sync engine like Exchange Active Sync or IMAP. But if you have questions around our implementation, we can definitely follow up afterward. Also, if I don't get into anyone, because we only got a couple minutes left for Q&A, I'm actually going to be back in the big room, right where it says apps and presentation, and can take a lot more questions. Go ahead.
Kind of a follow-on to his question, is there any add-in capability to the mail app?
Right now, there's not. Yes?
How do you implement the launch of the photo app and then be able to look at the other photo attachments?
Yeah, so there's been some work done in the file system APIs to allow apps to enumerate different files in a specific folder. So yes, so the Photos app itself, basically what we do is when we download all the attachments, we actually just put them in a folder, and we just tell them, we're like, hey, photo app, please like look at all the photos in this folder. So to them, they're just iterating over a set of photos in a folder, just like the photo experience that's built into the Files app does, or into the Photo app does. Yeah, so some of the stuff I didn't talk about, which is an interesting thing we can follow up on more if people are interested, is how we do background sync. So we actually spend a lot of time using a lot of the new tools in 8.1 to really create a great background sync experience, and it's actually a tiered experience. In Windows 8, what we had was we basically looked to see if you're on what's referred to as a metered network. Often these are costed networks, especially in like Europe, they're much more common than they are in the US, where you don't get an all-you-can-eat plan, but you have to pay by byte. So in those cases, we actually throttle back, and we say, hey, we're not going to download attachments until you ask for them. We're only going to download the first 20 kilobytes of the email and be more conservative, but still make sure you can get that push email. And then there's another one where it's like you're not on a metered network, and then we used to just download 100 kilobytes of the email, but still not get the attachments. In Windows 8.1, we've created a lot more detail in that layer. So we have what we do for metered networks, and then what we next detect, and these are all public APIs. One thing I wanted to make clear through the talk is that the mail app is built on the same dev platform that you have and uses all these controls extensively. So anything that you see in the mail app, you can do in your app as well. So then the next thing that we do is we say, is the screen on? If the screen's on, we know based on most battery life statistics that the screen sucks more power than anything else. So we don't feel as bad grabbing some extra things like, oh, a little bit more email, attachments. Then if you're on AC wall power, like you have a desktop or your end's plugged in, we just go all out. And we're like, oh, let's go get everything that we can because power's not an issue because you're actually connected to AC power. And we sort of create that tiered experience through there. And Windows has a set of APIs where you can get access to the different power states and then make different decisions based on that power state that's appropriate to your app.
Those are new in 8.1, right?
Yeah, those are all new in 8.1 because we also weren't able to do this in 8.0 either. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Do you guys also have to go through the store certification before you post?
Yes, we do. We also have to go and wait in line through store certification, and if they find an issue, we have to go and fix it. Yep.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Declined.
We've definitely hit issues that we weren't aware of until we went through store certification and then went and fixed them. Yeah.
Excuse me. Hello.
Oh yeah.
Great presentation, by the way.
Thank you.
So you showed you can open multiple instances of the mail app in
yes.
Snap View. Is that a feature across the OS or just for the mail app?
Yes, it is a feature across the OS. So whenever you create a new window, you actually create it in a hidden state. So it's not visible to the user. It's not on what we often refer to as the back stack, which is this over here. And then you basically, once you've created all of your UI and have it all ready, you then say show, and then it just pops right up on the screen. You will get a splash screen experience as well. But any app can implement this. IE did it. The Reader app did it. The Mail app did it.
Well, a few more things. Is there a feature like if someone happens to mention the date or the time in the email, so it's kind of highlighted,
yep.
and when you tap on it, it just directly opens the calendar app, and you can start making an entry for it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a feature already implemented?
That's not in 8.1.
Okay.
There are a couple things related to that. So if you're using the browser, your app can also opt into this. You can turn on phone number detection. This is available on new MSDN preview. There are some APIs on that. We're working on turning that on in the mail app. I believe in release preview, it's already on for Internet Explorer, and that'll launch any app that's hooked up to the basically cell colon or mobile colon, whatever it is, phone provider, like in this case, Skype, if that's installed. There also is a new calendar contract that you can integrate with as well. So what that allows you to do is to have experience similar to this contact card experience right here.
Mm-hmm.
Where, let's say I worked on the Yelp app or something like that, and then I'm browsing through the Yelp app and I want to put something on the calendar, you can click an Add to Calendar button. They pass that app, any third-party app can pass that information in a structured format, like here's the date, here's the time. There's a piece of Windows-owned brokered UI that could pop up, and then you can choose exactly which calendar you want to put on and commit that.
So the same thing can be happened for address as well. Like you can open the Bing map.
Yes, there isn't a way, there isn't something that's in the platform that automatically recognizes those addresses for 8.1, but you can opt into this contract if your app recognizes those and wants to pass that information through.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Hi, is there a way to have the mail app open and also have the traditional desktop up?
Yes, you can. I will show it to you. So in this case, I've got the desktop here. I can pull it right next to it, picture of my daughter. and you can see that they're both open at the same time. I could open Explorer here, things like that.
Okay, and that'll exist with multi-monitor too, so I can have one monitor that has maybe the mail app up and the desktop on the other two or
definitely.
Three.
So let's say you have like some awesome dev setup and you've got like two or three monitors. You can have, depending on the resolution and DPI of those monitors, you can have up to four apps on every single monitor. And that can be the desktop, which is just treated as one app in that case. Or you could have the mail app with multiple child windows up. You could have music, video, a pretty advanced setup going, and then you can rearrange those different windows, resize them, everything like that.
One more question.
Yes.
You were showing labels on your app bar buttons at the top, there, at the bottom of the
yes.
screen. Is that a pattern that is new for 8.1? And when you shrink the screen that they disappear, is that part of that pattern?
Yes, I believe them disappearing by default is new in 8.1. And you should just get that for free. The WinJS app bar control, if you're using that, or the XAML app bar control. We do a lot of work to make sure those platforms behave exactly the same in the controls. It should work exactly the same. So if I go over here, they'll automatically drop. If I resize it, they'll come back. And also the grouping functionality with these dividers is here, and also choosing if you want things on the left or the right. I believe it's called like the selection area versus the global area in the code. You just specify that in the CSS on the buttons.
Great presentation, by the way. Thanks.
Thank you.
Do you have time for one more question?
Last one.
Okay. You were mentioning how you can do multiple windows from the modern apps, and you can do your desktop and stuff in multi-monitor. Does the desktop support multiple windows too? So say I could have, you know, one monitor, two monitors, all desktop, and then one monitor with, you know, a few of the modern apps?
I'm not sure. But I can double check. If you want to come back to the big room, I can find Sarah, and she knows the answer to that.
Okay, great. Awesome. Thanks.
Great. Yeah, thank you all for coming, and then I'll be in the big room.